Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, online training for product managers so you will create products customers love. Several years ago, I was part of a group of product management professionals, and we all felt that our profession lacked a good how-to guide that product managers could use and benefit from. We considered writing one ourselves, but life was kind of busy at the time, and we never got to it. A few years later, the Product Manager's Desk Reference was published, and I thought, hey, this was the resource that we had envisioned, and we didn't even have to write it. Bonus! Instead, my guest, Steve Haynes, wrote the book, and has also written Managing Product Management, as well as the Product Manager Survival Guide. And he just put the finishing touches on his fourth book, The New Manager's Survival Guide. He is the founder of Sequent Learning Networks, a provider of training and organizational advisory services to mid to large organizations. And I asked him to join me to discuss an important topic that we haven't yet explored on this show, which is the business case. Don't think it's a negative word. You'll learn all about it more in just a moment. We talked about the right and wrong ways to use a business case and how this tool can really improve your success as a product manager and save you headaches along the way. To get to the notes of the discussion, go to www.theeverydayinnovator.com/049. Stephen also offered a business case template during the interview, and the details for that you'll find in the show notes. theeverydayinnovator.com/049. Hi, Stephen. It's good to be talking with you today.
It's great to be here. Thanks a lot.
So let's first get your backstory. You have this huge amount of product management experience. You've helped so many other organizations in a number of areas, including product management and business management. But let's dive into that product management experience. How did you get your start? Where did that experience come from?
It's an interesting journey. In my first book, The Product Manager's Desk Reference, the introduction is called The Accidental Profession. So I came into product management by accident. I'm a trained financial guy, worked in a large corporation called AT&T, and had an opportunity through some work that I had done to take on a product management role. And this was some of the things that were really interesting to me at that time were I wanted to focus on international business. I wanted to focus on business customers. And I ended up taking on a product management role for a made-for-Japan telephone system that was produced in the U.S. Hmm. So that was a really interesting start.
And I think I've heard of AT&T before. They do something with telecommunications, phones, something.
They were. This was when they used to think that they could still be a monopoly, but we all know what the backstory is on that as well.
Yep, still around as one of the big three for wireless,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, of course. So anyway, there was a fair amount of evolution, one of the things that was really interesting is I took to product management like a fish might take to water, and the reason is products are businesses, and I had always thought that I was a really decent business person, a good business generalist, not a terrific technologist, but I realized that business and technology had to find some healthy balance. And I worked in a Bell Laboratories organization, and I worked with people who were really instrumental in helping me to understand the scope and the level of technology that I needed to understand. And they helped me along the way. And between that and my continued thirst for knowledge and understanding ended up in a program, in a product management task force that was chartered by the senior executive team at AT&T back in the early 90s. And the reason for that team being chartered was the company was feeling threatened. It had been about 8 years since the divestiture, and they were wondering how they were going to be a competitive company. And they understood that there were other large, complex multinationals that were doing a good job, and they had product management at the helm. And so this task force focused on a very, very interesting and creative, need I say innovative, benchmarking protocol. And what we ended up doing as a team, and there were only about eight of us over a period of about 5 years, visiting dozens and dozens of companies, large companies like Boeing and Sony, Milliken Mills, British Aerospace, companies like that, that helped us to understand the things that they did when their products were more successful. And that tended to round out my broader experience in understanding not just about product management, but how product management served as an integrative function inside of companies and could be the source of competitive advantage.
It really is an interesting role, isn't it? And I want to just highlight a couple of things you said in there for the everyday innovators that are listening. One is a challenging role, right? Your background came from a business perspective. Typically, we see people from all kinds of backgrounds enter product management, but probably more times than not, it's from a engineering or development role, a marketing role, or sales role. And it is one of these unique, highly cross-functional roles that requires, as you said in your case, the strong business background, but you also had to learn the technical competencies, at least, to work with the groups. And that's what makes it also challenging is it's so cross-functional. You have to know a little bit of what everyone does and have a couple, you know, key strengths. And it's usually that business technical combination that help people to excel.
That's correct. This is also, we have to look at product management as a business function. And very often I will draw a diagram and I'll show the pictures of a picket fence with the pickets just standing upright. Except pickets don't stand upright by themselves. They need a back brace. And the pickets that stand up represent the functions within an organization. Mm-hmm. And those functions actually feel that the company would fall down if it weren't for them. And rightly so. And sometimes they build their agendas around those. What product management does is it offers a horizontal function. It is an integrative function that allows people to synthesize and orchestrate the work of others on behalf of a product's business. And companies that master that tend to do better than companies that grow product people out of a development organization or out of marketing sometimes, although product is increasingly reporting to chief marketing officer types in companies. So, but the main idea is really about the role and the mindset of people who play that role.
And it's a great visual, that picture of the picket fence, which does highlight the other thing I want to bring up too in your backstory there, which was, you know, AT&T was recognizing that the way to competitive advantage was through product management processes and putting that in place. And I've worked with other large organizations who have done the same thing that said, you know, the way we're going to move forward is by focusing on new product development. And I was recently on a previous interview talking about Lego and the company that has really come back from the brink of you know, headed towards bankruptcy there for a few years. And today, 60% of their revenue is from new products, and it's become a core focus of what they do.
That's great. There was a company, a big industrial company in Europe that had the factories, believe it or not, be in charge of the products. And the factory owners, so to speak, the factory managers had P&Ls. Well, that company, after dozens and dozens of years of doing that, have now switched. And now product people drive the business. So they direct what should be produced in the plants, not necessarily the other way around. So again, really, really healthy and helpful transformations inside of these complex companies.
Yeah, it certainly is a critical role. More companies are embracing it. So let's talk about a specific tool now to help product managers be more successful in that role. And that's the business case. And I know as soon as I say business case, some people want to just turn off. So hang with us right now, because this isn't a bad, evil thing. It doesn't have to be something that I know in some companies, the business case becomes a project of its own. And the problem is the business case is this large project, and then it just never goes forward, right? And people kind of feel like they wasted their time. We're going to talk about how business cases can be effective and help the product manager. But let's start out with just what is this beast? You know, what is a business case? Why do we care about it? When do we want to use it? Let's set that foundation.
I think that's a really great question. And you really bring up an important context. A lot of people get scared of this thing called a business case. It's interesting you called it a beast. What it really is one of the most helpful instruments that a company can have at its disposal. And any business person, product person or otherwise, can use this this vehicle. And essentially, it's a justification for making an investment. And that's really it. And what's very, very interesting is it's very often perceived as a series of financial statements or just a P&L that gets manipulated by people who think that if they manipulate the forecast numbers, that ultimately will trickle down and it'll make a good impression on the executives and they'll get their money. Mm-hmm. What we really need to do is focus on it as a bona fide justification document so that people can do the homework that's required to say yes to good investments and no to bad investments. Now, a couple of things about this, which is quite interesting. People say, so what is it that we should be doing with these business cases? And the interesting thing is that they will vary. They will vary in size and scope and depth and in areas of study. So, for instance, a brand new product may require much more comprehensive perspective and a comprehensive case versus a line extension or derivative or some other kind of an enhancement to an existing product. All right. But the other thing that people fail to see is that business cases can be used for an operational improvement, a capacity addition. You can even do business cases to acquire companies and build factories. They can be used for all sorts of things, not just for the basic product investment.
And let's talk about when in the process of thinking about a product for product managers, when do we care about using a business case?
I think it's important to have a business case in the back of your brain whenever you're considering a new idea or a new opportunity. And if we can orchestrate in our mind's eye an executive summary, meaning it's almost Stephen Covey, like how do you begin with the end in mind? Mm-hmm. What do you envision happening? How would you envision the corporation or the company integrating this into the fabric of its operating model? And very often we lose sight of these things. People get infatuated. They are downright passionate about the ideas and the opportunities that they could come up with. But there are so many ideas and opportunities that it's really hard to vet. And sometimes people, product managers, marketers, and other business people alike, get frustrated because they feel that perhaps their management is not listening to their ideas. Hmm. When in fact, what's really required is they're giving some more careful thought to what it is that they're trying to do. What's going on in the market? What's the reason the investment is so important? What would provide competitive advantage to the company? Why would it be strategically important? If it were your money, would you put it into this investment? I want people to think about these things and bring their team members in, not just to have to do it on their own. You don't lock yourself in a room and do a business case. If the company has to integrate it, you have to bring the people who are going to be accountable for those integrations into the party, mm-hmm. if you will, in order to bring that case to life.
A lot of pieces in there. I like the key thing you said. The purpose of the business case is really justification. That, you know, think about this in terms of, if this was your money, would you make this investment? And this brings us back to that business perspective that product managers need to have, that when we're engaging on a new product, this is really could be thought of as a new business. It could be its own business for sure.
Without a doubt.
And a business case contains all these components that we want to think about, right? Like, who's the customer and what problems do they have and what's the solution we're providing and what's that financial picture in terms of the cost of the solution and revenue from them and all those things. But it is to justify the decision of moving forward or not. And sometimes I think when we talk about justify, people get the impression that this is a sales tool in the sense that I'm trying to sell my organization on this idea. I don't view a business case that way, but let's talk about that. Do you see that distinction between, you know, it's kind of a decision tool, right? It's to justify if we should move forward or not.
Without a doubt. Let's put it into a little bit of context. Most companies have a phase-in gate product development process. Now, while many people feel that those processes tend to be rigid, they actually are very, very helpful. Because what they're not supposed to do is be a checklist and a series of things and forms that you're supposed to fill out. What this process is really about is helping people to make decisions and to evolve the documents according to the vetting process. So very often the innovators and the product development guys, they like to use the funnel visual. Mm-hmm. We're putting a lot of ideas and opportunities into a machine, into a big pipe. But the pipe only has a certain amount of capacity, whether it's the throughput through planning and doing the homework and doing the research and getting teams involved, to the ability to get it developed, to the ability to get it into market, and the ability to manage it while in the market. So we have to have, within the context of these investments, some line of sight to the capacity of the organization and the development process and the decisions that need to be made in this phase and gate process. Now, there are a lot of people who are in the rapid product development mode, and things are agile and things are lean. But it doesn't negate the need to know what it is that you want to be working on and how you're going to rally your troops. And so the case is, again, the way to do this, and the case will evolve. So you may come in with a one-page opportunity statement that may summarize what the investment is about, how it came about, who would be involved, sort of to as a quick socialization. And then that idea can be pitched, almost whether it's like a Shark Tank or something like that, a short pitch that is used to socialize with other people in the organization. So it's not really about just filling out the form. It's about getting people on board. One of the challenges, though, is a lot of people don't do that, and they just start writing the case and they start ramming it into the pipe of the business. And there's this expression I use, it's called corporate indigestion. When there's too much stuff coming into the pipe, not properly vetted, because there are too many people who have passionate ideas and not enough decision making within the gates. So we don't want to race to a gate just because we have to get a checklist done. What we really want to do is use this as a way to check in with all the key stakeholders to make sure we're moving along, that the resources involved in assembling this document are not being waylaid from other work that they ought to be doing, so that you can get a perspective on how this investment is really going to fit with strategy, to fit with competitive advantage, and the other things that are really important when it really comes to integrating the business case into the business.
And there's so much learning that takes place with that process, right? So I think a lot of people are glad to hear that this can start with a one-page opportunity description, right? Mm-hmm. We're just kind of scoping out what we might do. And then as you get other people involved in this idea, you're starting to learn what might work, what might not work, and really evolving your understanding of the customer and the problem to get to the point where now we've done a fair bit of research to know we have a concept that is worthy of putting more of a business case around to move into a stage gate process.
That's correct.
And so one thing that goes wrong in business cases, like you said, they become their own thing and people just rush into building the big document. Let's talk about other examples of how business cases are not used effectively and what happens in those cases. And I'm sure you've seen lots of examples of business cases not being just people not using them wisely.
So in the research I've been doing over the last 12 or 14 years, when I go into a company and I'm doing some kind of advisory or diagnostic, and it has to do perhaps with a business case audit, and I'll ask the question, can you show me the original business case for this product? And I will usually be lenient and say, if it's under 5 years old, more than 90% of the time, I cannot get a client to produce the original business case. They may bring out forecasts and things like that, things that were in spreadsheets, but not the original case. And one of the things that is bothersome is it's difficult to see how well a company has integrated an investment if you can't find the original case. And it's even compounded further because one company, especially larger or more complex companies or multi-divisional firms, they're doing maybe hundreds of these in a given year. And if I were a portfolio manager at the senior executive level, I would want to see how is my current business model running? And when all of these incremental investments were folded into the fabric of the company, how did the portfolio change and what were the results that were received? And therefore, it's not just product manager's responsibility to make sure that these things are documented. There's a senior leadership accountability to make sure that all of these can be properly integrated to say, we did these, here's what worked, here's what didn't work. So you have to sort of have an auditing mindset. And one of the challenges is that companies, especially companies that have more of a technical orientation, tend to evolve and iterate around planning, development, launching, planning, development, and launching. This sort of this release treadmill. And what's not happening sufficiently is the look backs that are required, what we call post-launch product management, the actual running of the business of products to see how all those investments folded together integrate to make a better product portfolio. The secondary part of the problem is that people aren't really looking back to see what are the dynamics of the market, what's happening within the industry, what's happening with our competitors, how are customers changing, and how is that fitting together. And therefore, the business case in most companies is treated as this sort of static one-time document, when what it really is a dynamic series of events, again, that have to be fitted into the portfolio of the company. And therefore, it has broad and tremendous strategic impact if we're only considered such.
Allow me to draw an analogy with project management. So again, a lot of people that are listening have a project management background. And as project managers, we know that a lot of work goes into developing the plan for a project, but that the plan is kind of the starting place, right? And if we've ever managed a project, we know plans never go, the real project never goes as planned. And that's why we need product managers and we don't need product planners, because we have to manage the changes that occur along the way. And the real learning takes place, though, in not that plan, whether it shows up in a Gantt chart or whatever form, but the learning takes place in developing it, right? And I think of a business case as the same way, that the developing this document, the document's the important artifact to go back to. But the learning is you had to figure out the information to go into it, right? What do your financials look like? What do the competitors look like? Who are our customers really? What is the problem they're having? And that sounds like that's something that evolves as you go through the process, too.
Without a doubt. And that's why the phase and gate process tends to help guide that thinking. It's about intensity. If I have three phases in product planning, and in our company we call it concept, feasibility, and definition. A concept phase is a single page document for the business case. Feasibility may be, let's say it's the ultimate business case would be 30 pages, all right? The feasibility phase would be a 5 or 6 page document, and the ultimate thing would be 30. But there are other documents that have to evolve along the way. So for instance, if the product project seemingly evolves into feasibility toward definition, we better have a product requirements document that is beginning to reflect the investment profile. We need to have financials that are starting to form based on resource estimates or the revenue model or timing or the expenses that need to be incurred or the headcount estimates or the capital purchases, things like that that are going to really impact the actual running of the company. The other part is that we really need to do sufficient market research. And one of the things that I really see just tremendous evidence of, and it is not as satisfying as I would like it to be, is that people in companies are not spending the time or money to fully validate concepts with customers. We presume that we understand what motivates or what a customer actually needs. But in the end, when I do some of the audits and lookbacks, I'm finding that there is a complete and utter disconnect between the end customer and what the company is trying to do. And an example would be a company who is a B2B2C company. And if you look at most B2B companies, there is a downstream element of an end consumer or an end business customer, and then the customer of that company.
And just to be clear, so this is because of people listening across the spectrum of experiences here. So these are companies that are selling to another company. So your customer, your immediate customer is actually a business. That business in turn is selling to an end user. Like we might go to the store and buy their product. And so that's the B2B relationship selling to the other business. But there's a customer out there at the end that's actually driving the stalls all from the beginning, right? They have needs that we're trying to meet.
Correct. Correct. I'll give you an example. There's a client we work with who operates in the consumer products business, and one of the big box retailers is one of their customers. The challenge is that they build their business cases around the model of selling to that customer, that interim retailer, not necessarily to the end customer. And so therefore, if they're building the business case and they say, well, we need to build a product that has a cost of goods of $15 that we can sell to for $17 to that retailer, so that retailer can sell it for $20 to an end consumer, that product may not really achieve its potential in market share and revenue and profit as it could if it really understood what it was working toward. It's a cost model versus a customer need.
Right. And it's important for anyone in this B2B space, you have to think about the actual end user, not your immediate customer.
Yes,
because the end user is the one that is pulling the product through the whole system. But if they don't care about what you're developing, it's not going to matter.
So so part and parcel to that market context is the strategic context. And that is, what are the goals of the company? And then if you're working in a part of a company that is a division or a business unit, what are the specific goals and strategies of that business unit? And how does this investment fit with that? And very often I will hear expressions like, well, we need to increase our revenue and our profit, and therefore this product will do that. Well, that's very, very high level, and every company has the same exact set of goals. We need to be much more explicit about the linkage between the investment and the strategy, and how are we going to use this to help the company achieve whatever those goals might be. And if I were to ask product managers explicitly, can you describe the strategy of your business unit, of your company, more than half the time they cannot. Yet they have great ideas. And what we need to do is really rewire our minds into, again, the fabric of this company in order to figure out whether or not these investments are worthwhile. And we, as product guys, might do a better job of self-vetting of these opportunities so that the ones you really want to consider to be put into the machine, the ones where you're going to put your credibility on the line, may have a better chance of being successful.
Yeah, when they're clearly aligned with the organizational strategy. And the difficulty that I'm sure you have seen is, unfortunately, so many organizations, they don't clearly articulate the organizational strategy. The senior leadership hasn't, maybe they're tentative about making the wrong steps, right, on strategy. But the middle managers that are involved in helping to make these decisions about what products do go forward, they just don't have a clear idea of what the strategy really is for our organization.
Right. Now, and there are a couple of things now. So we have market, we have strategy, but I'm cognizant of our time, and there are some important things I want to make sure that we're talking about. And that is, I want to go back to something we mentioned earlier, and that was, this is a decision-making process, and it's a decision-making vehicle. And that means we want to say yes to the good ones and no to the bad ones. And all too often, many product-oriented business cases just move of their own weight. The fact that people started and they're psychologically and emotionally invested in this, they will not kill those projects that don't make sense, and they bring products to market that have no business being there. And I think what we need to do is really have the kind of communication and transparency inside of companies where the executives say, this is what we want you to do. We want you to do this. Instead, people who are in product roles feel that they will fail if they fail to bring the business case to life. And that is a mindset that must be changed. We have to really think that what we're doing must add value to the business. Otherwise, let's not waste our resources because they're too scarce.
Yes, Stephen, this is a critical aspect of organizational culture. I'm so glad you're highlighting it. And organizations build up this inertia to doing new projects some of the time. And so because of that, then when they actually get one going, they don't want to kill it off because of the work that's taken to get there.
Right.
And instead, we really need a culture that's just the opposite, that is a learning organization that values this fail fast kind of mentality and put together quick experiments to try something. And we're proud of killing off ideas that don't support our strategy,
right,
that don't end up looking like they're going to be valuable in the marketplace.
Right. And I think that even the vocabulary or the term business case ought to be used in iterative environments, and we're not. All right. Because we think it's going to add some kind of rigidity or some kind of an extra overhead to our work. Yet, if we just took a few extra minutes, if you will, in the overall scheme of things, to really record and study what has to happen, we not only can validate to the team, we will leave some legacy artifacts for the people who take our place later on. And so it's, I can't emphasize the importance of this particular document.
Right. It gives a tool then for people to go back to and see, where did we start with in the first place? And a lot of times there's good ideas that come up that it's just not their time, right? The trend wasn't in place for us to capitalize on that idea. And they do come back around. And if we don't have these artifacts to remind us of the knowledge, the history of the organization, we're losing out on opportunities.
Without a doubt. We, you know, in my desk reference book, I use this expression, the product master plan. Literally what it is, it's a repository. And if a team or a product person or whomever creates single or double page opportunity statements and it's decided to not move forward, those ought to be preserved. Those should be categorized. And product managers that come in the future and they become the stewards in the products business, they should have the ability to go back and take a look at what it is that people were thinking about. What were the signals that were evident at some point, and have those signals become more profound. And it could be really a bucket full of ideas for new innovations that may have their time may have come at some point in the future. So it's really important to capture this historical information.
It's an important point, keeping those artifacts available and having product managers look at them and familiarize themselves with the history of the organization.
Absolutely.
And I like it that you did put a big emphasis on validation is a key issue that we have, that we're not validating that we're actually developing the right product for the right customers.
Exactly.
Early on, and that the business case can help us with that. And this doesn't have to be a big chore. This, you know, starts out as a one-page concept. And these days, I don't know if you've have looked at this tool before. When I start down this path, I've been using the Lean Canvas tool lately, which for listeners, you can go back to episode 10. That would be the everydayinnovator.com/010. And I interviewed Ash, the creator of the Lean Canvas, because it's the one-page business case for a product, right? Which is, who are your customers? What's the problems? You know, what's the solution? What's the value proposition? And some other key information. But it is that way to get started thinking about your product really as a business, right? How, as you said before, we're going to make this investment. Is this the right investment that is aligned with the strategy of the organization?
Absolutely. There's something you just said. You talk within the context of the canvas and value proposition and so on. I very often want product people to explain to me the customer's journey. Just tell me their story. And mm-hmm. And there's a reason behind that, because I like to build a value proposition from the customer's perspective, not what might suit the company, but what the customer or the end customer may actually be looking for. And there's a reality behind that value map, because if you don't really perceive or understand the value proposition to the customer, you cannot build a relevant pricing model. And the pricing model gets put into the revenue model for the business case. And so we need to do that sort of customer-oriented business case and really get their mindset in order to be able to validate and prove to others that the pricing model that we're putting forth will actually work.
Very good. Lots of good discussion. I know we could continue, you know, diving into specifics of business case. For people that want to find out more about this, what would be the best book that you've written that you would point people to learn more about details of the business case?
Well, in the Product Manager's Desk Reference, the second edition that came out in 2014, mm-hmm. there is an entire chapter on a business case. Not only that, I actually wrote a business case inside the chapter. I portrayed a situation, and then I said, here's how you write the business case. So I literally wrote it. It is part of an entire module of chapters that identified the evolution, concept, feasibility, definition, development, launch, business case, marketing plan. So we know how to start from the idea and bring the product to market and then integrate it into the company.
And listeners, I will put a link to that in the show notes for everyone also.
Perfect.
So, Stephen, let me ask you, if you could go back in time, you know, you've learned so much about this field of product management over the years. If you were starting out again, what was the thing that you would like to know that you didn't know then that you appreciate now?
That's a really great question. One of the things I think I was naive to in the early part of my business career was the need to be more politically savvy and to have a higher degree of organizational instinct. And I'll tell you why. Everything that a generalist, an integrator, a product manager, we can't do our work in a vacuum. And in many cases, we don't have people who work for us. And everybody talks about the magical word of influence. But influence is a word may be easy to say, but is extremely difficult to do. Mm. And I learned things the hard way. I've learned through interventions in the early part of my career as a supervisory manager with bosses and peers who actually cared and subordinates who cared deeply to help me be successful. There were things that I learned about developing relationships with people, not necessarily my peers, although that would seem anathema to many, but it was the managing up and across that I thought was important, so that if I wanted to socialize an idea or ask for help, how did I go out and do that? And so that sort of getting around the company, the invisible org chart, as some might actually call it, all right, establishing those connections, those are things that are really important. So much later in my career, when I was leading larger product organizations in my last 5 years of my corporate life, I was at Oracle, and had 5 directorates, coaching my directors and their subordinates on how to establish connections was really important. Okay. And I thought that actually gave our organization a leg up on some of the others because we worked inside of a technical organization overall.
Stephen, that's just incredibly valuable advice. And I'm so glad you shared it. And I'll share a quick story with you, which is I was recently talking with a technical product manager, and everything he was saying was spot on. Absolutely identified the issues in the organization. And he had good plans and approaches for, you know, driving things forward and responding to what the organization actually wanted to accomplish. But as he was telling me the way that he was telling me this, I knew he was creating friction with others around him. And I talked to someone else in the organization to verify this. And indeed, he is highly respected, great ideas, not sure he's a team player, right? And having that organizational instinct develop early in your career is so important. And one of the tips I give out, which is super simple, and I'd love to see more people do it, is you just contact someone else in another function in the organization that you don't know and invite them to lunch. And you just simply say, hey, you know, I'm in this product management role, and I'm just trying to learn more about what the functions are in this organization. Mm-hmm. They have no other agenda. Let's just go have lunch. And it's those relationships that you build up over time that become so much more valuable later.
Sure. People in other departments are really proud of their work, and mm-hmm. they should be celebrated. And the things that people learn about are amazing. You know, being a non-technical product manager who always worked in advanced technology environments, I had to really learn things. And when I would inherit a new product or new sets of products, I would humble myself to the engineers and the R&D people. And I'd say, I can help, but I need your help. Please, can you draw the system, draw the boxes, circles, narrows, help me so that I can ultimately help you. And I mean, that's sort of a nutshell discussion, but this took place over time and it required travel and it was eating and drinking and hanging out with these people and just sort of being their pal and starting to earn their trust overall. Mm-hmm. And then doing things that would be helpful to them, perhaps removing roadblocks or barriers. So I remember one time when we were working with an internal supplier and an internal factory thing, and we were trying to build a test box, a test head for a telephone switch. And I said, you know, maybe that there since the company is so difficult for us to deal with internally, maybe we can go outside the company. And they all said, well, how could you do that? And I said, why don't I do a little bit of research? And we ended up finding some outside vendors who were able to do this. And then we all came together, developers, systems engineers, me, some other guys, and we actually created one of the first outside RFPs. We actually went to the outside and made a game-changing decision that ruffled tons and tons of feathers. But the fact is that we got everybody into the party, all right?
Right.
And that collaboration, that spirit of team, that win was beyond remarkable. And it got recognition up and down and across the organization.
Yeah, and that itself was innovation, right? You did something new to the organization.
Yes.
And create a collaboration and people working together.
Sometimes some of those stories are a little bit more rough around the edges than we thought, but because some of the embedded leadership, you know, we don't do those kinds of things here, were a little bit more difficult. So we had a few boss protectors as well along the way.
It's important. You need to have some cover doing those things.
Yeah.
So I love innovation quotes. I asked you to bring one to share with the listeners. What quote do you have for us?
There was a talk or a speech given by J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter author. She was at Harvard in 2008. And she said something that I thought was really amazing. Not that I was going to Harvard or graduating from there. And she said, imagination is not only the uniquely human capacity to envision that which is not, and therefore the fount of all innovation and invention. She says, in its arguably most transformative and revelatory capacity, it is the power that enables us to empathize with humans whose experiences we have never shared. And to me, the word innovation and creativity is sometimes a little bit overused. This sort of becomes muted. And what we really need to understand is that we, as business people, we as product people, have an opportunity to affect the lives of people. And ultimately, the people buy our products. So if we can understand their lives, if we can touch them in a way that nobody else can, in the way of providing something that makes them happier, makes them feel better, makes their lives better, makes them more money, whatever those things might be, we have the capacity and an infinite capacity to do that if we would allow ourselves to do some of these things. And especially the reason this is important to me in this discussion on product management and on business cases is that business cases put the innovation into business perspective. And that's the connection between the ideas and execution.
And thank you for sharing the quote. And, you know, product managers get into product management because they want to have influence in the organization and they want to please customers. They want to create products that provide them value and solve their problems. And I love that. And it all starts with that imagination. How can listeners find out more about the work that you're doing and discover the resources that you've created over your time?
That sounds great. Well, I'm the founder and CEO of Sequent Learning Networks. We're a 14-year-old organizational strategy firm. We focus on business management, product management, marketing and strategy. And what we try to do is help companies organize more effectively so they can produce great products. And we can be found at sequentlearning.com. To that end, I'm the founder. The person who actually runs the company now is a guy named Bob Caffarelli. And Bob was a client. He was the head of product management and engineering for a very large industrial firm. And he also is a published author. So in our stable of books right now, The Product Manager's Desk Reference, Managing Product Management, and The Product Manager's Survival Guide is also complemented by Bob's book called Creative Strategy Generation. And that book is outstanding. It is a practitioner's perspective on strategic planning. But what's so unique about it is that it uses the parallel of musical composition and strategic planning and draws it together in the most amazing way. And fourth, just the other self-promotion is I just finished a book called The New Manager's Survival Guide. And it really is about helping business people, whether they're new to a company or they work in a different department, to improve their level of business acumen. And in order to be a good product person, you really need to have all these ideas and experiences with respect to business acumen. So those are the things that you can use to catch up with us. The other part is that what I wanted to offer you is if listeners are interested in receiving a business case template from the product manager's desk reference, that they should reach out to me at sjhaynes@sequentlearning.com, and I'll send them that template.
Wonderful. Thank you for making that offer. The Everyday Innovators listening, I'm sure you would appreciate having a good template for a business case. So again, that email address, Stephen?
sjhaynes, that's sjhaynes, @sequentlearning.com.
Great. Stephen, again, thank you so much for being part of the show. The information on business cases is certainly very valuable for the listeners and for me too, a good refresher for me to think about the importance of these. And I appreciate you taking time with us.
My pleasure.
Everyday Innovators, I so appreciate you listening. It means the world to me when you recommend this podcast to other product managers and innovators. There are only a few free resources like this for product managers. Please keep telling your colleagues about it. Go to theeverydayinnovator.com/049 to find the show notes and details of the discussion. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.